As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. I personally use it to guarantee that I'll always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you want to check out a Bitbox O2, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. All one word, no spaces. Check them out.
Ah, screw it. Here we go.
So what they do is, instead of having their own pool, they are being a proxy and sending all of your work over to Antpool, for example. And that's what this website is showing you. All of these pools that do have the same color scheme on all these non-spaces and all these block templates, all of them are tied together and all of them are working together. So they are just sharing around the hash rate and proxying all the data over to, let's say, Antpool, Brains, whatsoever. And what issue arises from this is we see centralization of who is in control of the next block. And this is really a big issue.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
Welcome back to High Hash Rate. I think this is episode 106. I'm, again, trying to keep count. But I just have to acknowledge that it's been a little bit of a while since we've been on air, and there's been some hiccups. A lot has happened. Major political events have happened. So I don't want to, like, go without mentioning that. And just in the time frame, that's all I want to say.
Yeah, we've been on a hiatus. This is our first time. We've had episodes come out pretty recently, but last time we recorded was, do you remember the date?
It was a month ago.
July 2nd. Yeah, so there has been a lot that has happened.
August 5th or something. 5th.
Yeah. But, so we'll address that later, I think. But today we have a guest, and I'm really excited to talk to him. Lars. Some people know him as, like, Want Clue. He's a software developer, a content creator, Bitcoin education, technology education, and he's one of the developers on the BitAxe project. So Lars,
yeah, hey there.
How's it going? What's going on, man? It is early in the morning for you, late at night for us?
Yeah, it's like 7 a.m. over here, but I'm really pleased to be your guest today. It's really appreciated by me.
Some people get up at 7 a.m. to listen to Bitcoin podcasts. Some people get up at 7 a.m. to be on Bitcoin podcasts. Yeah. And so today you are on one.
You're in, like, Eastern Europe or something?
No, Eastern Europe, no. I mean, Middle Europe is in Germany.
Okay. Yeah.
Right before we started recording, Lars talked about being from Germany. And again, Mike.
But that was before we started recording, so I wanted that piece of information. Come on, Dave. Come on, I have a strategy here.
Anyway. Fair enough. So Lars, I guess let's jump into the BitAxe stuff. So what is your role? What are you doing with that project? And can you tell us a little bit what that project is for those who don't know?
Yeah, so first of all, I need to make sure that nobody gets this wrong. I'm not the instigator of the project. I'm not the founder or anything. And we are not a company, we're not an entity, we are a decentralized network of people on the internet who are doing some crazy stuff with Bitcoin, and that is what this project BitAxe is all about. And let's dive into this. So BitAxe has been a proof of concept, and now it turned out to be a valuable product. And for those of you who might be wondering now, what is the BitAxe at all? You can think of it like, maybe you've heard something like a Raspberry Pi from this form factor size. And the BitAxe is basically the same form factor, sort of. It's a little bit bigger. But what it is a teeny tiny small Bitcoin solo miner. We intend to call it a solo miner because the hash rate depends on the model. And we will dive into this just later on. But what it is, it has been a proof of concept of how to actually get an ASIC chip and be able to produce an open source Bitcoin mine for this. And it turns out it's working. Somebody found a block. And it's just a small, really small Bitcoin miner. And to give some rough numbers, it consumes up to 15, 20 watts. And it produces, wow, depending on the model and the ASIC chip that you do have on it, between 500 to 1 terahash, 500 gigahash to 1 terahash, which is really, really small, but it turns out it doesn't matter. And that's it.
And so the BitX is relatively new.
This is like circuit board or something? What is this thing?
I've seen it. It looks cool.
Yeah, it's a circuit board. So that's the reason why I called out for the Raspberry Pi, because some of the listeners in the audience might know this form factor size. The Raspberry Pi is basically credit card size. The BitX is a little bit longer, and it does have a couple of components on it, like a small screen where it can read stats like your hash rate, your uptime, shares that you have sent to the pool if you're connecting to one, as well as a big heatsink and a fan on it to cool down the ASIC chip that is actually on there. It's a control board. Of control board.
It's great. I saw one in action in Nashville at the Bitcoin conference, and it was pretty exciting. But like I said, they're relatively new, or at least new to, you know, the culture that I've been hearing about it. How long would you say that it's been kind of, I don't know what the term would be, but in, not for sale, but for, it distributed around, the people using it, and how, if you have an estimate about how many people are running BitXs right now?
All right. I think the best approach would be to actually go down into the section of the history of the BitX.
Perfect.
To point this out to you specifically, the BitX project has been instigated by Scott. And I definitely need to shout out him here, because he's just a genius mind. He's a electronical engineer by training. And a couple other people, I can't point all of them out. It's way too many people that are contributing to this project. And we have so many lovely people in our Discord. I can also dive into this in just a second. But this is our form of communication that we do have. We don't use like Bitcoin forums or anything else. We do have our Discord server. And there happened basically everything, the talk about firmware changes and stuff like these, new releases, bug fixes, like we currently are facing one bug that we're trying to fix. And this Discord is basically our form of communication that we do have between all the developers and also the audience, or just members that are eager to find out more about the BitX project. And to talk about the history of the BitX project, it has been in mind of Scott for a couple of years. It bugged him quite a while. And he was starting thinking about it back in 2021, 2022, where he actually wanted to create something like a day miner. And his concept was to have a Bitcoin miner that he could create from himself, like sort it on your own, get everything sorted and working, and then hooking up to a solar array. This was basically the initial idea that got him into this creation of the BitX project. And quickly, he figured out something is completely wrong on the Bitcoin space. We do have basically 3 to 4 ASIC manufacturers worldwide. Most of them are in China, and none of them is giving any information out. So you don't actually know how these chips work. You don't actually know how to communicate with them. And there comes the tricky part in it. You need to do something that's called reverse engineering, basically hooking up a couple of wires to end miners or anything else, and then figuring out what kind of commands is going between these chips and a control unit. And that took about 1.5 years until we got the first BitX running. And during this 1.5 years, his concept or his call naming for this device changed from Dayminer to having it with a solar array to BitX. I'm not really sure why, actually, but it changed in this period of time. And then we had the very first BitX up and running. It's called the BitX Max, and it probably will get a little bit confusing for the audience later on, because we do have so many different models. We have like the BitX Max, the Ultra, the Super, and so on. These are different models tied specifically on the naming scheme for the ASIC chip. So the newer the name, or yeah, the newer the name, the newer the ASIC chip is basically, which means that you do have more hash rate. But let's get back into the history. So we had this first BitX, the Max, with a chip from the S17 ASIC miner. So we, with the BitX device, tend to use only Antminer chips because they're way easier to communicate with. We do have a couple of people that are thinking about going into WatsonMiner ASIC chips or Avalon ASIC chips, but that's a complete new story. The communication with these ASIC chips is way more complex compared to Bitmain, because with these Bitmain chips, you can basically just hook up a couple of wires, send a couple of UART commands, and I know this is techie stuff, so you just send over a couple of commands in a specific language, and then it works. With WatsonMiner, it's totally different. You need to have some sort of encryption, decryption, and stuff, which makes it way more complex for the average user to get it running. So, yeah, whatever. Yeah, go ahead.
No, and I was going to ask you, so part of the reason for the centralization or the lack of competition in this mining space, right, is due to the complexity of the manufacturing of ASIC chips and designing these systems. So it seems like BitAxe is trying to simplify that process, make it a little bit more accessible to the average person. But at the end of the day, it still takes a lot of resources, energy, expertise, money to actually manufacture these chips. So do you see that changing anytime, at least in the short to medium term? There's different manufacturers, they're moving to the United States, they're moving, away from Asia, away from Taiwan. Is that going to improve things, or is it something it's going to be a very difficult problem to solve, and there's no easy solution?
Before I dive into this question, I still need to point out that this whole process of getting the first proof of concept of such a device up and running took quite some time, and it actually also used plenty of resources of human being able to understand what's going on there and reverse engineer all the process of get to this point. And it took quite a while to get to this and to actually allocate all the data at the right position to make it happen. But what you're pointing out here with producing of ASIC chips, so maybe the audience needs to Google something they can learn as well, because the ASIC machine, basically the term for an ASIC machine is wrong, because the ASIC is just one single chip on such a big machine. And when we're talking about Bitmain antminers or any of these other machines, they do have something that's called a hash board and a control board, where we do have the differentiation between the control board being some sort of the head of the operation who's sending out commands to these chips. And then you do have up to three hash boards with plenty of these chips. And an ASIC chip is really tiny. It's like 9 to 9 millimeters. I'm not sure how many inches that is. But it's really tiny. And they're all hooked up in series, usually. And then they do their stuff, calculate something, and send it back to the control unit, which then interprets this and sends it back to the pool to give you a share. So that's on this part. And yeah, the production of ASIC chips is literally a problem. And as I tried to point it out earlier, the BitX and the idea rises or has been raised because there is this lack of openness in this whole space of mining. And usually I attend to a couple of these conferences here over in Europe, and my starter is something like, think about it. Have you been to a Bitcoin conference? If so, great. But think about what have you listened to. You've probably listened to a couple of node software people talking about Lightning, Layer 2 solutions, or mining. But if you dive into the mining section, usually what you will find there are people that are trying to sell you something, like their mining pool, their software, or their hardware that is brand new, but nobody knows what's going on. And that's the issue. That's the issue that the BitX project tries to solve. The whole project is specifically open source, from the hardware over to the software. And for those of you who might be interested in it or likely to read into it later on, we do have a website called osmu.wiki, where we basically published everything that we do know, like from these trips, what they do, which kind of ports you need, what you can do there, basically everything. We are aware of the fact that these Bitmain chips that we do use are still proprietary hardware and we can't produce them on our own. And that's another issue. But we try to make it as good as possible for everybody to understand what's going on and to publish as much as possible to call this an open source project, because the hardware itself is not that complicated. But when it gets into the section of the ASIC chip and what you pointed out earlier, that we do see manufacturers only from TSMC or in China or somewhere else, that's an issue. And we would love to fix this, but it takes a lot of money to actually produce your own ASIC chip. And the highest hope that we currently do have is Block in the US, where they're trying to produce their very first own open source ASIC chip. And Scott received some of these development kits from them early on. So he's trying to work on that as well. And I mean, I don't have any more information than that, but it looks promising. And I really do hope that we see a little bit more shift towards other manufacturers who are actually producing their own ASIC chips, so that we are not tied in this market to only like three ASIC manufacturers, which is an issue itself if you're thinking about decentralization and broadcasting the greater good about Bitcoin mining.
Well, I do have a question here I want to jump in. Why do you think it matters so much that you know what's going on in that chip? Like, if they're hiding that information or, you know, not telling the public, obviously, why does it matter so much to break into that and understand how it's working?
So think about it like your purse. You probably do have something in there and you want to know what's going in there because you don't want to have a knife that could potentially stab you or anything like that. So that's a pity to compare it, but I'm trying to get to a point. So back in 2013, 2014, we had this issue with Bitmain called end bleed. And I'm not sure if you're aware of the fact, but back in the days, they implemented software that actually allowed them to shut down your miner from remote and you couldn't do anything about it. And this is the whole spirit about it. We're trying to dive into the section and not allowing any of these manufacturers to overlook us or to tell us what to do. The biggest issue that we currently do see is, for example, Brains with their licensing service that they do use. And I do pointed this out on X a couple of times. It was quite an argument with them going back and forth. But the whole concept about why it needs such a thing like the BitX to make it more open source to the people is, you don't want anybody to control your machine that you purchase with your very own money. And that has happened back in the days with AntBleed, where they actually could shut down your device. And it could happen again. And we do see it also with other third-party manufacturers who are trying to introduce some sort of a licensing server where they actually do have some sort of control. For example, this new 1 terahash miner that got released by Brains, they need you to have a communication with their server. And if there is no communication, this device is basically a brick. I'm not trying to shit talk about Brains, but I'm pointing out that this is the wrong approach and that the community is now held within these companies and you can't move away from them. So you are not owning your device entirely.
And is this also an issue with, or something that would be related to ASIC Boost when they were using ASIC Boost and other miners didn't know that they could do that? Like you can, there can be features of your hardware that they're not telling you how to use properly, and it could be used, they could be using it at their advantage and your disadvantage.
I mean, that could be a fact. ASIC Boost was a great discovery back in the days. It was tremendously faster than the usual hashing of the algorithm, but it got figured out pretty quickly, so that wasn't really an issue. And these days everybody is working on ASIC Boost, so that's not an issue. And it was on the hardware level, that's for sure. But one important thing, especially about the hardware and figuring out what's going on there with these chips, is think about what if in the future Bitmain, WhatsMiner, whatsoever, they do introduce a new hardware change where they lock you down or do have some sort of a option to lock your device. And this is something that we don't want to happen. That's the reason why we're doing all this work and why we're trying to focus on the stuff of getting everything up and working for the people to understand what's going on. And I do get it. Plenty of people don't understand all this techie stuff that we are doing, but at least we're trying to publish all the data and we're really frequent on updates and stuff like this. So if you do have the time and the effort, would love to take the effort of going into this techie stuff, then you could read through all of this. It's not like a novel book where you can just understand it and you get it. It is techie.
How do you guys come to, this seems like a, you said it's like a distributed workflow of, you know, everyone working on this thing. How do you guys come to consensus on ideas about the design or, you know, what you're trying to achieve?
Prioritizing work, prioritizing bug fixes, prioritizing optimizations.
It's a little bit tricky. I mean, with great decentralization comes great issues, I'd say. So as I said earlier, we do have our own Discord, which is basically our form of communication between all of us, between the people who are loving the BitX project or between the developers. And we have this community called Open Source Miners United. And yeah, I mean, in this Discord, usually what we do, we have five developers that are working actively on this. I'm not talking about anybody gets paid. The only one that actually gets paid is God, but he received a grant from OpenSats. So this, it's not a payroll from OSMU, but it's a grant. So that's lovely. Now he can does all day long what he loves to do. And all of us, other people that are contributing to this, we are just doing it as soon as we do have time for it. And we usually come to a consensus that we try to implement something that is needed, or we do see a bug that needs to be addressed, and then we go a usual route. We have a GitHub repository, which is basically a website where you can host code and publish code and stuff like this. And you do have a couple of different options there. You can set up an issue and point out something is not working, or you can request a change. And if you do that, you can notify all the other people and you can request a review from somebody else. And that's this usual route that we do take. We try to implement something. We pointed out what the issue of this is and what we're trying to fix. And if somebody else approves it, or if you think it's mandatory and needs to go into the main branch immediately, then we just push it right away. So we have a couple of people that have write access to the GitHub repository. I think it's like 5 or 6 different people. And the rest needs to be approved by these 6 people.
When it comes to contributors and people who might be interested in learning more and how to contribute, because, like, you know, a lot of things are just like open source software. So people think, oh, I'm not a software developer. I can't code. So I can't really contribute to this. But other than software, what are some other avenues? What other skills do people do you need to
basically everything? I mean, okay, it's software, it's hardware, even design work and stuff like this. I do have a YouTube channel. I made a specific video about how to contribute to GitHub and to contribute to the BitX project or any other project that you do like. And I really encourage everybody, if you do think you have some idea, even if you're not capable of signing up to GitHub and making a pull request, it doesn't matter. Just go somewhere and tell it somebody. Maybe you find someone who is actually capable of doing so and working with you on your idea, which is really needed, because we love to encourage people to do stuff. Just being there and having the greatest idea of your life but not telling anybody, it's the wrong approach. That's my opinion on that.
Yeah, I would piggyback, and I've talked about this on the show, but it's been a while. If you are new, especially, you know, I'm a software engineer by trade, so this is, you know, where I know it best. But if you're new to coding and you're looking for a job, for example, and you don't have the experience, in my opinion, one of the very best ways to get experience, valuable experience, is to find open source projects, especially like in Bitcoin that you care about. Go through the process of learning how to pull the project to your local machine, make a pull request. Go through the issues on the GitHub page, look for bugs that, you know, you don't have to be an expert engineer to fix bugs, you know, in JavaScript or Python or C++. And you can just build your confidence, build your ability to collaborate with other teams and to get things done. And it's really a great way to get your feet wet there. But
it's good advice, Dave. Good advice.
My next question, I guess, is if somebody wants to get started, right? So if you go on the website, you can see sellers, people who sell BitAxes, different entities that build them and send them to you. But maybe the average person should start there and they should just buy one and get one and look at it and plug it in and figure out how to start mining. But then where should they go if they want to build their own? Like, are the instructions as easy as an Umbral? Is it as easy as setting up an Umbral node?
It gets a little bit more complicated than just setting up an Umbral, but...
Gotcha.
Let's start from the beginning. So the first page that you should go to is called bitx.org. This is the official BitX website. And on there, you will find a variety of links to, let's say, for example, the OSMU wiki, where I've written down all the information that we do have about all different ASIC chips that we use, or how things are wired up and stuff like this. So the bitx.org would be the first approach that you need to take. And if you're not really into doing this on your own and you just want to get one for the sake of trying your luck in solo mining, then there's also a purchase list called the BitX Legit List. What this is basically a list of manufacturers that reached out to us to be on this list, and we approved them after a while as soon as we figured out they are working. And there's also this goodie on there that it states something like contributor yes or no, which means if they make a sell, a certain amount of money goes back into OSMU to fund our development. So this is like a goodie on there, which is good because that's what we use for creating new PCBs. PCBs are printed circuit board, basically this Wien board where you put on some components and they do some electrical stuff. These things cost money, and these funds, we use them for that. Or if we do have a new machine that we need to sniff on, and with that I mean like we need to figure out what's going on this machine, need specialized hardware to actually get into the serial commands that are sending on there, we do have specialized hardware which also costs money, and that's what we're using these funds for. And we also do have a list of where goes what kind of fund and stuff like this. So everything about us is open source because we're not a company, we're just spreading the love of money. And when it comes to actually build one of your own, I could highly recommend my own live stream. The first ever live stream that I did, I tried to build a BitX by hand, and it went quite well. I'd say it was a little bit tricky. And I had a really, really easy setup because plenty of components were already soldered onto the board, and I just needed to solder on a couple more components. But be aware of the fact, if you want to go into this rabbit hole of building your own BitX, like ordering these PCBs, ordering all these components, and then taking the time getting into it, you need basically 3 to 4 different things. First, you need to have the time, and you need a lot of time if you've never done this. Second, it's not soldering with a soldering iron. It's SMD soldering, which means you have a hot air gun. And the third thing is these components are tiny, literally smaller than a millimeter sometimes. So they're really, really tiny, and you need to have a steady hand. If you're shaking or anything else, it could be hard for you, and I wouldn't recommend it then for you. And the last thing is things can go wrong. And this is usual, and that's also some sort of proof of work maybe for you if you tend to go or punish yourself a little bit going through soldering. It's not easy, but it's doable, and I did quite some videos about it, a live stream and a couple other videos about how to do it. And in the next couple of weeks, I will release a whole series about how to solder your very own BitX. Because what we're trying to achieve is to bring this knowledge to the people. Sure, we do have plenty of manufacturers which are not really in any collaboration with us, but some of them are contributing to OSMU. So these entities are on their own. They are producing BitXs and they do sell them. That's it. That's all what they do have to do with us. And maybe they sent off some funds over. That's it. But all of these manufacturers that you will find out there in the wild, they are their own company. They have nothing to do with OSMU. And it's like a wildfire. Sometimes you do see a new company coming up and some of them are closing down. I don't know. And we also do have a couple of copycats. So to go back to your question, the first starting point would be bidex.org. Check this out. If you want to purchase a BitX, check out the legit list. I highly recommend only purchasing from this legit list, not because we're getting any funds of it, but because these are companies that are actually doing good, because we have seen copycats that are producing BitXs with poor components, which could cause these boards to burn out or to actually lit on fire, which is bad. And we don't want your house to burn down.
No, absolutely not. I want to go back and cover something. It's kind of an elementary, fundamental question, but can you just explain the difference between solo mining and what a lot of people are familiar with this, which is mining with a mining, like brains or Antminer or something like that?
Yeah, sure. So the easiest way to explain this is solo mining is you're trying to hash with your machine all day long. And if you do not find the block, you get nothing. And pool mining, on the other hand, is you get a payout depending on the payout scheme. And there are plenty of schemes. Like, for example, Ocean has Tides, which is sort of another implementation of PPLNS. It's a little bit different, but it's like you do send over your work that you have done. And after a period of time, if the pool has found a block, you get a payout. Then there's other pools like Brains or NiceHash or whatever. They do have something like FPPS or PPS, which is basically you get a payout every time you submit a share. So every time you send over some work with your machine, which is, it's an issue in itself. And this is a whole new topic, because FPPS is bad for Bitcoin and the decentralization of Bitcoin, but I don't want to dive too deep into this section. But yeah, so you get the point. You do have different payout schemes on the pool side. And don't get confused. If you're talking about solo mining, you can still solo mine in the pool. There is this, I don't know, this theory of pool mining is only for people who are trying to bake together all their work and then they find a block and then everybody gets an even share of it. No, pools is basically just some sort of a service that allows you to communicate with the blockchain and try to find the next solution for the next block. That's it. And it doesn't matter if you're going the solo mining route or the pool route with shared payouts.
I'm a little curious if you have something else, Dan, but I'm a little curious about your past, like why or how you got into this line of work. It's such a specific thing to like try to figure out and make this decentralized, you know, machine based around a protocol, you know, the Bitcoin protocol. It's such a specific thing. It's like, how did you get into that?
So it's quite a funny story. It was mid-2023 I'm a software developer, so I hang out on GitHub really frequently. And sometimes I'm just bored and looking through all GitHub repositories that are recommended to me. And I was just scrolling through GitHub and out of nowhere, it recommended to me the BitX project. And I was like, hey, what's that? And it was really on early stages, like with the BitX Max. The Ultra was just coming out on this date. And I just hopped in there. I looked into the Discord and I was like, that's pretty interesting. And then I ordered my first BitX. I tried to assemble it on live stream. And basically, I worked my way up from being just nobody to doing a couple of educational videos about it to now being a developer on this project and being an admin on the Discord and trying to make everything work and creating a great new community here. And the thing about this is a couple of people maybe think now, all right, there's a BitX and it only has like 500 gigahash to a terahash per unit. This doesn't matter. I mean, sure, if you're talking about pool mining, which we just discovered here early on, and you're trying to make a buck every day, this is not the correct approach. And this is not what we're trying to get you into. I said it earlier, the BitX project has been this proof of concept of, can we actually get it to happen, that we can get an ASIC chip and make it functional with a designed board by us? And yes, we can. And then it was this whole sentence of like, does it actually find a block? And we tested it on testnet first, and we found a couple blocks on testnet, but testnet is still different to the mainnet. And a couple days later, on the 24th of July, so right on the first day of Bitcoin Nashville, somebody found a block with a BitX device. And this was a block 853742.
So with this little thing, built device, they found
it. There's one caveat to it. We can't prove it entirely. And I'll explain it. So this block has been found with CK Pool. And CK Pool is a solar pool which does have a 2% fee. So you only get a payout if you find this block. And then you need to pay 2% at CK Pool, which is fine. And really shout out to the CK Pool dev. This dude is a legend, literally. So there was one BitX connected to this specific Bitcoin address on CK Pool for 14 days, hashing at like 300 gigahash. And on this date, he went up from like 300 gigahash to 3 terahash. And all his devices were named .bitx. So his Bitcoin address .bitx. First thing is, why would you name your device .bitx? And the second thing is, it really adds up. If you just add a couple more BitXs to it, you can literally reach 3 terahash. And this was his hash rate at the point where he found the solution. And it was quite funny, because on the 17th of July, he shut down basically all his operation. You can see this on the stats page of CK Pool. So his 300 gigahash were going to zero. And after a couple of hours, it went back up, went up to 3 terahash. He found the block and he got offline again. So It really takes just one single share to find the next solution for the next block. It's this gambling game. And
So what are the odds of that? Do you have
one in a million.
I mean, no financial advice here. This is lottery mining. You can call it like this. And with one BitX Ultra, which does use the S19, the Bitmain Antminer S19 chip on it, you do have the odds of 1 to 7.5 million per day to find the solution for the next block, which is really low. And I was trying to get to this point. One device on its own doesn't actually cause a change on the blockchain and the behavior of all these pools. But what we're trying to achieve here, and I interviewed Scott a couple weeks ago, and he put out a rough number that he wants to reach, which is like selling up to 1 million BitX devices, because then we would be at a point of hash rate where every 6 days, one BitX would find a block.
Oh, wow.
And that's what we're trying to get to.
That like flips completely.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're not trying to get into this section of creating the next big and new and versatile mining pool or operation. What we're trying to do is bring back these devices to the people at home. And that's the reason why they're so small. They just consume up to 15 watts, which is nothing. Like, especially with US prices, where the electricity is low compared to
your
Europe,
light bulb.
It doesn't matter. I mean, in Europe, it is, here in Germany, for example, one BitX costs you like 10 cents per day, which is okay. It's not bad. In US, it's probably way less. But the idea here is that everybody does have this device at home. And then occasionally, somebody would find a block solution. Maybe you can even create some sort of a combined pool and getting smaller payouts, something like this. It would be possible. It's a little bit more complicated. But we're trying to make the shift from the centralized pool operation that we do see and all these centralized entities that are having exahashes of hash rate to being a home miner and just contributing this way.
No, it's just crazy. I just want to say that it's crazy to think about this lottery mining,
I wanted to know, how did you find out that a BitX miner found a block, or is suspected to have found a block? Like, how did you find out, and what was your guys' reaction? What was the Discord like that day?
Yeah, it was crazy. So it was quite funny. It was, I don't know, midday, and a friend of mine just called me, buddy, somebody found a block. And I was like, no, don't fuck with me. You're talking bullshit here. And then he was sending me over CK pool stats and sending me over the mempool space. And I was looking through it. I was like, okay, some solo miner found a block on CK pool. That's great. And then I looked into the stats for this specific Bitcoin address. And then it stated .bitx. I was like, okay, now I'm interested, but it's still not proof because you could achieve this kind of Terra hash or this kind of hash rate with any other device as well. And then I was looking into it. I was taking a look on the hash rate over the last couple of days. And then I was like, okay, this seems to be really one bitx or a multiple bitx that are combined together to these three Terra hash. And somebody just mined a block. And I mean, as I said, it's not 100% proof, but it comes really close. Why would you name your worker address .bitx if you use, for example, an S9 or something like this? You wouldn't do that. I mean, you still could, but even then, how high are the chances that you actually hit a block? They're really tiny.
Right.
So
a lot of things would have to come together. I mean, when I saw the headline, I had to do a double check to make sure it wasn't like a Bugle article. If you're familiar with them, right? Like, it's like, oh, this is satire. But no, it wasn't. So it was very interesting. And everybody was talking about it in Nashville that day. What is there anything coming up like in the near future? Any new developments? Any new announcements that you've got expected for this year? Or are you guys just continuing to build? Okay.
Before I answer that, let me quickly go back into the section of this whole decentralization idea.
Please do.
I need to point out one specific thing, and it tends to be that it is really important for you US people over there. So think about it. Regulations are one thing, and you could like them or you could hate them. But what if, for example, the US does have, I don't know, some new law which restricts you from owning Bitcoin or mining Bitcoin, or you need to be an entity that is allowed to. And then you do get, I don't know, some sort of a rule set, which is also a complete new topic about centralization and in mining centralization, stuff like this. But with the BitX device, imagine half of America would have a BitX at home. Good luck going all in all these places and trying to get rid of all these BitXs. You can't. It's hilarious. And that's the spirit that we're trying to achieve here with bringing this to the people, just contributing to the network security, if you like to call it that way, and just have a device that you don't care about, because 15 watts is nothing you care about. It's the same like your cell phone charger. You don't care about it. And that's why this device is specifically that small of a form factor and this small on the hash rate wise. But we're trying to get the best out of what we do have. We have something in development, a couple different things. I, for myself, of my company, are currently developing a 2-chip design, which is called the Bitforge Nano, which is specifically the middle finger to brains. But that's another topic. And we do have other developments as well. Like, we have multi-chip designs with one board, multiple chips. For example, we do have the BitX Hex, which is still sort of in development. It is functional, but not everybody is producing it. We only have one producer who's creating this BitX Hex, which is basically one PCB with 6 chips on it. So you can take the BitX Ultra times 6, which creates to 3 terahash, and they do draw at like 60 to 70 watts. It's a little bit more, but it's still not too high. And we're trying to...
How is it possible that it can draw so little amount of wattage if an ASIC miner is... these bit miners are drawing like 1500 watts of pop.
That's the whole beauty about these ASIC chips. So in these big bit main machines, you have like 3000, 3500 watts that they are drawing. But think about it. There are like 200-300 ASIC chips in it. And we don't use that many ASIC chips.
It's just the amount
we just
of ASIC
use
chips
like one doing. Or six or whatever. We do have quite an amount of derivatives of the BitX. We do have a whole section in our Discord, which is called Members Projects, where other people have produced their own implementation of a ASIC miner. We have something that's called the QX or the QX Plus, the 0x eggs, which does have apparently up to 8 or 16 terahertz of capacity, which is quite interesting because we are not tied specifically to this BitX on its own. Sure, that's the whole topic all around in OSMU, and this is the product that we are developing and bringing forward. But we also do have members that are working on their own projects and that are bringing their own project out there to the wild so that we even have more devices.
What is the expected lifespan of one of these BitXs, or, you know, the maintenance that you might have to put into it, or because it stops working? Assuming the hash rate doesn't quadruple in the next year, for example, right? Like, how long could you expect these to be, how long do you expect them to last?
So the maintenance on these devices is usually pretty low. There are two things that could happen. A couple months back, we had a couple of issues that we needed to fix. And wait, let me start somewhere else. So the maintenance on these devices is pretty low. You just plug them in, you set them up. And by the way, this is super simple. You just plug in the power cord, then there's a screen on it, and it actually shows you, like, connect to my Wi-Fi. And you connect to this Wi-Fi, and then you do have like this generic website of, okay, put in your BTC address, put in your pool information, click on save, restart. That's it. That's how easy it is to set up this device. And okay, let's move on. So the maintenance is really low. Only thing that you need to watch apparently from time to time is it still hashing? But usually it should hash forever until it breaks. And we're not sure about how long these ASIC chips will last. But if you do compare this to something like the S9, these machines are no longer produced, but they're still running, which is insane. And these have been produced back in 2017, so, or even earlier. So yeah, they will run for a pretty long time. And when it comes to maintenance at all, you maybe need to watch from time to time in the web dashboard that you do have with this device the temperature that it reaches. Because we still use something like thermal grease, which is used, for example, also in your personal computer for your CPU to cool it down with a cooler and stuff like this. And you have some thermal grease in between this cooler and your CPU to cool it down. The same applies to the BitX. Between the cooler and the fan and the AC chip, there is this thermal grease. And this can, it can dry out over, I don't know, like 1 year. So maybe after a year, you need to change it, which is like, I don't know, 5 cents changing that. So that's not really that bad. Another thing, and this happened to us a couple months back, that we pushed for a update. And then we figured out a couple of people does have some issues. And with the latest firmware, we figured out a new bug that we're currently fixing. So the best way to actually approach this device would be to set it up and run it with a version that it comes with, because this is probably the most stable one that it comes with from any of these manufacturers, and then just leave it. You don't actually need to update it. Sure, we're trying to push on updates for bringing in new features, such as I've now brought in this overheat mode. If it detects that your device does reach a certain threshold of temperature, then it will automatically shut down and tell you on the screen, hey, I overheated, please, care about me, fix me. That's what it's telling you.
Pour some canola oil on.
Yeah.
Seed oils.
Pour some seed oils
on. Basically, there's not that much to do. If it hash, that's my usual term. If it hashes, it hashes. Don't touch it. Don't change the running system.
It does sound pretty easy to set up. You still have to solder the motherfucker together. You know what I mean?
No. I mean, you can get a pre-assembled unit from any of these manufacturers.
I'm thinking I have to solder this thing together.
No, you don't have to solder. There are so many distributors of the BitX device, and these do-it-yourself kits or doing all of this on your own is only 2 to 3%. Everybody else is just purchasing a pre-assembled one. And you can get them basically everywhere. Also on Walmart online, you can get them.
Yeah, you can easily. I was just looking at the legit page. If you guys have ever heard of Kaboom Racks, You can buy them at KaboomRax. And I think, I'm pretty sure if you just go on Telegram to KaboomRax, like you can give them a PO box and that you can pay a Lightning invoice. They don't ask you your name. They don't ask you for your social security number, your credit card. You just get a no KYC and have it delivered to your house, plug it in. So that's pretty cool. You've mentioned this a few times and you've talked around kind of like the issue of centralization in mining. And I think some people talk about it as a hypothetical, and they talk about
it's like hypothetical.
Exactly. And I was going to say, can you talk a little bit about, like, maybe just from your perspective, what's the scariest or the biggest risk right now? I mean, we've got,
want everybody in the audience who is listening to this right now, stop this podcast, please, and do yourself a favor. Go to the website stratum.org. Do this. Open this up. What this will show you is a website with all these block templates. And what a block template is basically it's work that a pool sends to your miner, and your miner works with this. It's trying to hash stuff around and figure out a solution. What is specifically interesting about the website stratum.org is you see different colors. And now compare all of these different pools, which you can see on the most left side. There are the namings for the pools. And then on the right-hand side, you see all these different colors. Now, all of these pools that do have the same color scheme are tied together. And there are plenty of them tied together. What does this mean? Especially talking about centralization or decentralization. I do usually talk about proxy pools and stuff like this on a couple of podcasts or X spaces. So we do have Endpool, for example, which is really huge. And they do offer something like FPPS. And we talked about this earlier. So you get a payout every time you submit a share. Then you do have plenty of small pools who also offer you FPPS. But we only talked about the reason being that you get a payout every time you send over a share. What about the other side? The pool operator needs to pay you. They need to fund this somehow. But they're way too small to find a block every once in time to actually don't go bankrupt. So what they do is, instead of having their own pool, they are being a proxy and sending all of your work over to Antpool, for example. And that's what this website is showing you. All of these pools that do have the same same color scheme on all these nonce spaces and all these block templates, all of them are tied together and all of them are working together. So they are just sharing around the hash rate and proxying all the data over to, let's say, Antpool, Brains, whatsoever. And what issue arises from this is we see centralization of who is in control of the next block. And this is really a big issue, because if you guys go to mempool.space and you take a look on the distribution of the mining hash rate, you see Foundry, for example, really, really big with over 30%, and then a couple smaller ones. But if you take into account all these proxy pools that are working together for Antpool, I usually like to shit talk about them because that needs to be said. The number that Antpool is shown in mempool.space is way bigger than what it actually says. And this brings up this issue of something else. And we talked about regulations earlier on. Think about it. You do have a US-based company, Foundry, for example, and they produce block templates. So they produce these sort of template for the next block. And now the government comes in and says, hey, mate, we do have a specific Bitcoin address that we want you to block. Don't put it into your block. Or have some IP addresses that we want you to block. Please do that. And because they're in the US, they need to follow these guidelines or these laws, which is an issue on its own. And if they are that big, over 30%, they will find a certain amount of blocks, and therefore they will actually censor you or your Bitcoin address.
Right.
Yeah, or anything else.
There doesn't have to be a 51% attack, quote unquote.
No, and this is already happening.
You could be censored at 10%. Yeah. If you need a transaction to go through quickly for whatever reason, you may not be able to do that. And so another thing that's... evidence came out a few months ago that roughly 47%
of all the newly mined Bitcoin from all these different pools. I think Ant Pool, F2 Pool, Binance Pool, Brains, BTC, SEC Pool, Poolin. They all are controlled by the same custodian.
Yep.
So that's it's just more evidence of another lever of control that a government or some other powerful entity could use to leverage against a mining pool or miners or whoever to, in order to, you know, flex their will to censor people to do whatever. And then to kind of piggyback on what you were saying, we've got all these public mining pools in the United, or public mining companies in the United States. And to be a public company requires a lot of regulatory compliance, all this overhead, this administrative work. You have to pay employees, you have to pay attorneys, people who can file paperwork to say, you know, to file with the SEC. And all of this, these are extra costs that go on top of these miners, and it makes their operations less efficient and more, I guess, susceptible to being bribed or being threatened by, you know, a state, whether it's the federal government, the state government, they where they're located, even like the mayor of their town, you know, in some instances. So there's so many different layers of risk and centralization in mining. And like you said, it's not a theoretical risk. It is a active problem.
It's already happening. That's the thing. And sure, people usually talk about this 51% attack, as you pointed out, which it's quite hard to produce over a sustainable amount of time.
Right, like a 51% attack is like a theoretical thing you talk about in freshman year of university to kind of get you to start thinking more broadly and more nuanced about these risks and attacks that could happen in this space. Whereas like everybody focuses on these 51% attacks, but that's if you're focused solely on that, you have so many blind spots of things that are actually going on currently that you're overlooking.
Maybe someone is still wondering what this 51% attack is. Basically, think about it like somebody's controlling over 51% of the total network hash rate and is therefore producing blocks really quickly and really often. And now this entity is in control of more than half of the blockchain, which is a risk on its own. And speaking about this, this is really unlikely to happen with just one specific entity. I do hear some podcasters are talking about it, like, what if the whole US would do that and combine? Yeah, no, it's just not possible. It is possible, but it would be stupid because what would happen instantly is the Bitcoin community would fork off and then just say to the US, for example, or any other country, good luck with that shitcoin. So it doesn't matter. That's the thing. This whole centralization, it's just a bummer that not enough people are talking about it. It's a shame, to be honest. As I said, like, my opener on stages or anything else is like, think about it. You do receive knowledge and information about nodes, layer two, mining only on the side of actually, where can you mine and how much will it cost you? But nobody is actually talking about how does mining work and how to get into it or how to actually understand it. And that's what we at OSMU are trying to change and what we're trying to approach you here with, to get you into this thinking of, all right, why do I need to do it like this? Why are these companies are telling me that I need to purchase their device? Why can't I actually look into it? So just be a little bit more on the side of somebody who is not trusting an entity, which is good.
What?
Suspicious.
What?
Yeah, thanks.
Let me paint the context here. Working in the Bitcoin mining space, working in such one of the most brutally cutthroat, competitive free markets, everything you're doing is you're transacting and doing business adversarially and expecting that your competitor, like, people just, I don't think necessarily
really
appreciate how cutthroat, competitive and brutal the mining industry. I mean, it's more so than any other aspect of Bitcoin, like, not even close. Like, the people who are in mining are just, they're not as
they're not as sweet and fun as all the people that you see at your meetups and conferences and working in marketing at Bitcoin companies, like the Bitcoin mining spaces. These guys are rugged capitalists.
Yeah.
What has that taught you? Like, what have you learned? And how is it, what is it like working in this?
So it's quite funny, to be honest. I mean, as a day job, I do something completely different than that, but no more on this topic. But mining is really brutal. There are only two options. Either you do make some money with it or you don't. And this is a Tide-specific issue, especially with these public traded companies in wherever, US, Europe, it doesn't matter. That these public traded companies, they need to make money. And if they do have venture capital and stuff like this, they do have somebody in their neck who's telling them, make more money, make more money. And now you need to purchase new devices. You need to expand your operation. And you need to become bigger. You need to become a bigger point of centralization in order to control the system, in order to make more money out of it. And mining itself is really brutal, as I said. And as you pointed out, either you do make money or you don't. Because, for example, I can't mine here in Germany. It's way too expensive. I would lose over, I don't know, $5 to $10 per day with one machine, with one single machine, if I would do that here in Germany, because the electricity price is way too high. So all of these third world countries are a solution for some of these hosting facilities, because they do have really cheap electricity. Or the US does have cheap electricity as well, which is good in this manner. But still, it is really, really tough. If you do have, for example, machines that are like 3 years old, you're kind of outdated. You need to get new ones. Otherwise, you're not competitive because electricity price is still there. You need to pay for maintenance. Sometimes you need to repair these devices because they can break. Something could happen. Maybe a short cable somewhere. And now one or two devices are burnt down and you need to replace them immediately, which is kind of tough. So working in the Bitcoin mining ecosystem on this space really taught me that Bitcoin is unforgiving. Like, it's so brutal for you. And if you do something wrong, it will be shown on your balance sheet instantly.
Yeah, I kind of think it's kind of ironic that some of the most ruthless capitalists are from China, you know? Of all places.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Lars, thank you for coming on here today. I do, before we wrap up, I do want to give you a chance to talk about your content, your education. So I'm on your YouTube channel right now. So it's youtube.com/WantClue, which link will be in the show notes. But you've got BitAx town halls, you've got tutorials, whether it's for BitAx stuff, mining stuff, you're doing hardware wallet reviews, and I mean, you've got everything here. Like, what kind of education are you doing? How often are you uploading some new content?
So before I answer this question, I only do content about open source stuff. So also all these hardware wallets that I do my due diligence before I review any of them, or even if I answer any of these manufacturers that are reaching out to me, I make sure that what they do produce is open source, because that is what I believe in. And it's a tough story on its own, because open source is, it's tough on its own, because companies have sometimes issues with making money off of it. But we have seen plenty of companies who have risen from this because they're doing such a great job in making it open source and contributing to this, or receiving contribution from their community, so that it becomes a great product. And for me, open source is just the way how it needs to be. Especially Bitcoin has been released as an open source product, if I do call it like this. It has been released under the MIT license on GitHub or on any other of these platforms as well. And having companies that are using this data or any of these open source produced software stuffies and just making them proprietary is anti-ethical to Bitcoin for me. And that's the reason why I stick solely on open source. And yeah, as you pointed out, I do all sorts of things. The BitAx town halls are basically sort of a podcast, sort of a Q&A every 2 weeks, so bi-weekly. I do a town hall in our Discord where people can just tune in, ask any questions, and I'm trying to answer them. And from time to time, I do invite guests to this stage as well, so that we do have some sort of a flow. Then I do plenty of videos about Bitcoin in general. I used to do shit coins, but that's past me. I will no longer do that.
Didn't we all?
And still then, I was just doing like educational content. I'm not this type of person who's telling you Bitcoin is rising to $1 million. Sure, this is wishful thinking, but I'm not doing that. I'm here for the educational part, and I'm trying to reach the audience who is willing to learn and educate themselves. And yeah, my upload schedule, I try to do it twice a week, but recently I've become a father, so it's a little bit tough to reach this, but I do my best.
Awesome, yes. And you're also at WantClue on X. Do you have a Noster?
Yeah. Recently, I changed recently my name, my alias on X. It used to be CluWant because some damn bot had the naming of WantClue. But finally, he got removed, so I could claim my alias.
Well, your X link in your header on your website needs to be updated. So that's a reminder there. I just clicked on that and went to the old site, the old Twitter.
Wait, but, on my website?
Yeah. Are you on Noster?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm on Noster as well.
Share with us your NPub after the show and just send that to us and we'll make sure.
Yeah, otherwise it's oneclue@noster.fan.
Cool. Awesome. I was already interested in a BitX. And I want to go back to something real quick. You said that it was going to be called Dayminer, and then you didn't know somehow it got switched to BitX. I think the BitX switch was a excellent idea.
Oh, yeah,
I think
definitely.
It's a very catchy, thing to call your product. So I was looking, tomorrow I'm getting on, I'm going to buy one, and then I think I'm going to, once I get it running, try to figure out a place where I can send my hash to benefit the Samurai devs. So
lovely.
If anybody's thinking about doing something like that and you need help, reach out to WantClue or reach out to me.
Dayminer, the name Dayminer reminds me of Blade, the movie Blade, you know, like Daywalker.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Anyway, yeah, I learned a fuck ton about mining industry. I didn't realize the problem of like the sort of centralization of all these pools. I didn't think about it.
Oh, it's a problem.
So thank you very much, Lars, for coming on. Yeah. Everything that Dan said about WantClue, you know, check him out.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to leave people with or where to send them?
I have nothing to add. I'm really pleased to be here. Thanks for having me. It was an honor to be here. Basically, this was my very first English podcast that I did. Usually I attend German based ones. So yeah, thanks for having me.
You did great. Yeah, man. We learned a lot. It was really good.
Cool. Okay, good. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked ADIQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com, or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!